Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Aki and Bree are here. Jacob will show up when Jacob shows up. How's everyone doing?
I'm doing a little better now that Xbox is working. There was an Azure outage earlier today that caused Xbox cloud services and gaming, online gaming and stuff to be broken. So that was not fun trying to get some like last time in before, you know, finalizing my review. So... yeah.
Couldn't have happened on a better day than Halo right? Early release day.
Right? Yeah. And I feel
that
like
had something to do with it. I'm going to
guess. It could be and I feel like there were reports that people were being told that they were too early to log in even though they paid for that early access. So
yeah, it was like a few hours it was fixed.
Yeah.
So I think it was just like a clock thing was off somewhere.
Yeah, somewhere.
Yeah. Yay.
Yeah.
I know disc gamers couldn't play it until yesterday because the game wasn't on Xbox servers yet. It finally uploaded. The preload went live yesterday. It's like 70 gig.
Yikes.
60 or 70.
Yeah.
Not too horrible in these days. 60 is not too bad.
Yeah, fair enough.
What is it? Where Winds Meet is 175?
Ooh, no.
Fucking hell.
Wuthering Waves is 110? Something like that? And it looks
now
like
I'm curious.
Shit.
How do you filter by the size?
For your installed games?
Yeah.
Sort by, not filter.
Not filled by, sort by, size. Let's see, the biggest things I have installed, I have 167 gigs, 140 gigs, 136, and 120, oh, and 115. Okay, yeah, so I've got a few that are big. All right, I got Destiny 2, Baldur's Gate 3, nice. Forza Horizon 6, Halo Master Chief Collection, Sea of Thieves, and Fallout 76 are like the top row of big things.
Yep, those are biggins.
Yep.
I know the two Final Fantasy VIIs and Final Fantasy XVI are all over 100.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They're big. Quite big. Forza Horizon 5, if you still have that one with the DLC, is 170 some.
Nice.
Yeah. You know it's going to be a little bit smaller, though?
What?
Original Xbox games.
Yeah.
Because there's a handful that are now on PC.
Oh,
that's right. Xbox announced that the backward compatibility program is working to bring titles to PC. 4 games are playable as of right now. Blinks the Time Sweeper, Fusion Frenzy, Crimson Skies, High Road to Revenge, and Conquer Live and Reloaded. More are set to come, obviously, and no word on actual new titles joining the program, but I guess we'll see in the future. The games are priced at $9.99 each, and owners of the digital versions have the entitlements already. They are also in all tiers of Game Pass, and this is fun news. In the future, they'll be updated to include achievements.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Original Xbox games getting achievements.
I feel like that's been on the wish list for a while.
It has. A lot of people have wanted that.
Yeah.
Now let's hope they add some more original Xbox games to add achievements too.
That would be cool.
There's what, like 60? That's gross. Come on.
Yeah. That's a lot. Yeah.
They need so many more than 60. There were like 1,000 or no, like 700 on original Xbox, and they got 60. No, no, we need more. Give me Sudeikis. Mm. Give me Halo.
Yeah.
Let me put Halo 1 in my console to play it. Wouldn't that be crazy to play Halo on your Xbox? Sure. Yeah, that hot new PlayStation title. What do you think of the BC program coming to PC?
I'm kind of excited. I hope that they bring more stuff. It's an interesting development for sure.
Data miners have apparently already found hints of 360 emulator work in there. No titles have been mentioned, but some independent groups have gotten games running through the Fission emulator that Xbox is using for the 360. And nice. There's a public version of it available, and they have some original and 360 games running on it. So I'd imagine we'll see some fun stuff in the future, I hope. Some more fun stuff in the future. Bethesda made a few announcements. Most notably, Elder Scrolls 6 is in heavy development. Fallout 3 and Fallout New Vegas have remasters in the works. Fallout 5 is in early development. And Obsidian is working with Bethesda on another Fallout title.
Yeah.
So if you like Fallout,
yeah, I do.
It is coming.
Yeah.
That is exciting. I am very excited about that.
Me too.
Despite the hubbub about physical discs, it appears that only 7 games have cracked 100,000 physical units on PS5 this year. We've got the reports I've seen have two different lists, so I'll just name all the games. So it could be like up to 10 games now. But the ones I've seen are FC26, Resident Evil 9, Lego Batman, 007 First Light, Call of Duty, Crimson Desert, MLB The Show, Ghost of Yote, and Monster Hunter Wilds.
Huh.
So those appear to be the only ones selling big time on disc.
Interesting.
Yeah. I'm sure a bunch of those sold way more than 100,000, but...
Yeah. I'm sure. Those are
the only ones to break 100,000. Game Pass. Let's talk Game Pass. We got a couple of games joining Game Pass, a bunch of games leaving Game Pass. Big lists both ends, but we'll weigh the pros and cons. Joining this week on the 21st, we got the Planet Crafter.
Okay.
If you want to build things. July 22nd, we got Shift at Midnight.
I'm excited for that one.
I was going to say that seems like a Brie game.
Mm-hmm.
Today, on the 23rd, we got Hell Is Us.
Very nice. I just bought that.
If you are a premium upgrade buyer or premium owner, you can play Halo Campaign Evolved right now. Otherwise, you're waiting until July 28th.
Nifty.
That's right. 5 days of early access.
Which, in my opinion, isn't really early access, because if the game is playable and you have released it to anyone, that's the official date. You're just preventing other people from getting to play it when it's out.
Yeah. I don't mind, because I always get the premium shit.
Yes, you are the cause of the problem.
If you're a big enough fan that you need to play 5 days early, you probably already bought the premium deletion or upgrade.
Yeah.
Right, Jake?
And you're all problems.
Possibly. Yeah. You could also just be a consumer whore.
Yeah.
Like you, Joe.
True.
Because you may like it, but really, you're a consumer whore. We all know it.
July 30th, Mistfall Hunter.
Okay.
All right.
Was that the one you previewed, Aki?
Yes, it is.
What was that one about? That was the extraction one?
Yep, that was the one where you went in and you found resources and got out, but you had to deal with both PvE and PvP. And yeah, right. The PvP part kind of took me out of it, because otherwise I thought it was fun, but I was like, the PvP part kind of sucks donkey balls.
I've heard an interesting mashup for action RPGs and those kind of games, extraction RPG.
Mm-hmm.
Like the emphasis on action.
Mm-hmm.
But the syllable on that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My soul hurts. Please stop.
July 31st, Corsair Cove is hitting PC. Game Pass.
Okay.
And then August
4th. That's one of those farmy games.
August 4th, Beast of Reincarnation.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. Dad, I'm excited.
Are you excited about that one, Aki?
Mm-hmm. That looks so good.
Why?
So pretty.
What has you excited about that one?
Hot chick, giant doggo. I'm all for it. And Souls-like. Like, they're, you know. Hey, I have my priorities, all right? Hot chicks, fluffy animals, good game style. You know, that's the rating there.
There you go. Can't be all good news. A bunch of games have to leave the service as well. This one was supposed to leave earlier, but now it is leaving. Back to the Dawn is leaving on the 31st. Celeste, Crusader Kings 3, Mount and Blade 2 Bannerlord, My Friendly Neighbor, Rain World, Sniper Elite Resistance, and Whiskerwood on the PC.
Damn, never heard of Whiskerwood.
A lot of games, and a bunch of those are good. Shit. Yeah.
So, like I said, a lot in, a lot out, and a lot of big ones on both sides.
I'm glad I went and finished My Friendly Neighbor. Because, damn, that was a difficult game. So.
Yeah, on one side we have Hell Is Us, Halo, Mistfall Hunter, and Beast of Reincarnation. On the other side, we're losing Celeste, My Friendly Neighbor, Rain World, and Sniper Elite. And Crusader Kings. Oh, that's a big one. Recreation 2 was announced, coming from When Tides Turn, a small UK-based indie led by former Criterion co-founder Fiona Sperry.
Hmm.
Uh-huh.
Unexpected, so, but okay.
Did you see the trailer for that one, Jacob?
I didn't. No? I mean, like,
look it up now.
What's the name of it again? Because I don't recognize the series at all.
Recreation 2, but spelled wreck, like wreck a car. It's very much in the vein of Burnout Paradise. So it looked great. It looked.
Oh, yeah. This looks like something definitely for you and Jacob, like times like a billion.
And this didn't look like Forza Horizon. It looked like Burnout Paradise because you are, like, from what they showed, you were just zooming through cities. There's not much open world stuff that they, at least that they showed off. It seems to be focused on highway racing. Which is
I want to know if you can, like, get weapons for your cars to help you. Because destroying other cars seems to be a good mechanic in this.
Their games have never been about weapons. It's just slamming into other vehicles and making them wreck.
Okay.
Okay.
Interesting.
Like, good stress reliever.
I'm more interested in this one than I was previously. I mean, it's not like I knew about it, but, I mean, the first one, like, it wasn't bad, but it didn't, like...
It didn't live up to what people wanted. And I think this one looks more in line with what people want.
Yeah.
Because this one's not trying to be Forza Horizon. I think that's what the first game did wrong, is that they tried to be too open-worldy instead of focusing on the action racing.
Yep. All right, yeah, that trailer looks pretty cool.
Looks pretty. So.
And cool.
Let's smash him shit. Last bit of news I have. Tyrone Rodriguez announced that Binding of Isaac Repentance should be getting online multiplayer on console later this year, along with a host of other updates.
Hmm.
So we're finally getting Repentance Plus updates on console. Yay. Haki, what do you have?
Hey.
Big old bunch of fucking nothing, because fuck that. I hate looking at the news.
Cool. Bree, what do you got?
I love the news. I have a little pile of things to talk about. Let's see. EA has stated that Need for Speed and Burnout are basically dead franchises with no plans to make new games for either of them.
Oh, Burnout's been dead for a long time.
Yeah, but they're making it official. Like, it's done.
I'm amazed they're shelving Need for Speed. That was like a yearly franchise at one point.
Yeah. Yeah,
and, but then they got caught up in something else and decided, no, we're just going to make this from now on, like every other company.
Yeah. Yeah. Sony has patented a new cooling system for the PS6.
Real quick, jumping back. Need for Speed is so populous with releases. I have an entire handful of 360 releases. This is an entire wide handful of cases, and I'm missing one.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot of Need for Speed games.
But I got the Carbon Special Edition with the slipcover. And Most Wanted just came in. That's the big one. That was worth a goofy amount.
I've played one of them once, and it was on the PS2, and apparently cops chased you. And that's all I remember.
Yeah,
I feel like
Need for Speed.
I feel like Need for Speed was my introduction to the McLaren F1, which was called the Street Legal Millennium Falcon when that was like brand new and shiny. I just thought that was cool. Anyway,
I could have ripped off a friend so bad with Need for Speed too.
Yeah.
Like our good friend Ryan Niemiller has been unloading video games and toys and cards and everything else. So periodically I'll check in like, hey, what new 360 games have you decided to unload? Because I'm trying to build my wall of 360 games. And I have a list. I'll send him. And he sent it back. And I was like, price him out. And he priced Need for Speed Most Wanted at $11. I'm like, are you sure you have the right one? Is that the new one that Criterion made? He's like, no, this is like the original one. Like, you should probably double check the value of that game, bud.
Because
it clocks in at about 80.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm not doing that to you, man. I'm not going to. We settled on like 50 plus shipping for it. He's like, because I bought a bunch of other games with it. So like,
total. Yeah.
So, but that one turned out to be around 50-ish, which he was like, you know, because you saved me, I'll help you out and cut you a deal.
Nice.
Now I got on my shelf. Yay. And that was a tangent. Yay.
All right.
We don't go on them, so
Sony has patented a new cooling system for the PS6 using a sealed heat pipe design that will replace liquid metal.
Huh.
So there was some speculation in there that because of this new design, that would make it challenging for them to have a disk drive.
God forbid they do like they have now and have a detachable one.
Yeah.
I think they're just making excuses.
Maybe.
That's because they are.
Yeah. There were a few hard delistings on Xbox this week, Creepy Tale 1 and 2, as well as Strike Force Kitty. This is because the devs, Creeper Brothers, are having a dispute with their publisher, No Gravity Games, over payments. Thanks to injury for doing some digging, a pattern has emerged where other developers of games like Exorder, Will You Snail, and Bullets and Brains have also been having issues with the publisher. All of those games have been delisted or hard delisted in the past few months. And according to a Reddit thread injury found, the dispute is that they're not getting paid royalties and potentially some other issues. And for clarification, hard delisting means that you lose the rights to the game you own and cannot re-download it even if you own it.
Just pay their goddamn people like it says in the fucking contracts.
Jesus Christ. If you don't have those games installed right now, you cannot currently install them.
Isn't there a very convoluted backdoor that you could use to
There supposedly to get is a very convoluted backdoor. I don't know how that works.
It involves knowing someone with the game.
With the game, yes. That is the general gist I heard.
They play it, you check their recently played list to see their games, you load up the game page that way and select launch game and it'll prompt you to install it.
Okay. Yeah. There's some other
at least most of those, but the problem is finding people who own them.
Right.
So did you ever delete Milo and Kilo?
Yes.
Yeah, I deleted it. Damn it, guys. Yeah, I know. So there's some games that I can't finish. Yeah, no, Carnage emailed me about that. So or message me about that. Yeah. All right. And then the last bit of the series of news I have is Movie Watch, if someone wants to hit the button for me. I know. I was not prepared. I'm sorry.
It's Movie Watch. It's
Movie Watch.
Oh, I don't like that. Oh, that was way too close.
Let's do it again, Jacob. You ready?
No, yep. Please don't.
It's Movie Watch. 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 There. There.
Good job, drug addicts.
Yep.
All right. Yeah. Following the success of Super Mario Movie and the Super Mario Galaxy movie, Universal wants to make more, but not Nintendo. They just signed a deal for 10 classic Atari game movie adaptations.
Oh.
Is that things like Adventure, Asteroids, Berserk, Centipede, Pong, Yar's Revenge, and Missile Command.
What were you saying? All right, where did you read that? Because I saw a meme about it, but yeah. I could not find any like actual articles about it.
I think it was IGN, honestly.
Okay, because I went to Variety and they don't have anything on there.
Huh.
And I you'd think that they would have, you know. It's Universal Studios. That's kind of big.
Yeah. Let me see if I can find it on my phone again.
It's on this site called The Hard Times.
Maybe. Well.
The Hard Times. Well, that's a satire page.
I know. That's the joke I'm making. Could be.
Jake, oh, no, okay.
Thank you for getting the blatant joke.
So supposedly they have script writers from big projects like Jungle Cruise and Hellboy. But yeah, supposedly that's a thing. And then, so hopefully I'm not reporting something that's a fraud, but that was what I saw earlier today. Ryan Hurst is being replaced in the God of War TV series as he has suffered a bicep tear injury on set that'll take too long to heal.
Oh.
Requires surgery and months of healing. So for them to continue production with the TV show, they are having to recast him.
So production can continue in October. I was looking forward to him too.
Yeah. Yep. 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 I thought he would do a good one. Speaking of God of War, not Movie Watch, one of the original creators of God of War says that AAA gameplay is being ruined by too much emphasis on storytelling. That seems like a hot take. Anybody have any opinions on that?
Stories are dumb. Give me explosions and boobs.
Well, I kind of get attention. I don't know. Like, are gameplay elements of things like, you know, God of War? I've never played God of War, so I don't know.
They're very. The God of War games, at least, are very deliberate. I don't want to say slow. They're deliberate in what they do and the actions they take. They're very plotting. They're not meant to be a fast action game like something like Horizon or Ghost of Tsushima or Yotei. Right. But the God of War games have always been like very
action oriented
and bloody and visceral.
Yeah.
So, Coltrane is all over my lap tonight, and I don't know what is wrong. What, baby?
Sweet baby.
No!
Yeah, that's all the news I have.
Oh, shit. We are getting rated BMD, bud, and 34 raiders coming in. Welcome in, everybody. Somebody give BMD a shout-out. Just ran into him earlier tonight as our friend Matthew from Botchamania rated him, and he is a independent pro wrestler from Canada.
Oh, so nice.
I hung out in his stream for a while and became friendly with them, and I am getting rated, and he's subjecting all of his viewers to the horrible, horrible things here. BMD with a sub. Thank you so much. Appreciate the sub. Thank you for coming in. Appreciate you being here. Enjoy the kitty cats and the emotes. You saw the emotes earlier. You get all my kitties. So many kitty cat emotes. And Doug. But yeah, we are chatting the news right now. We just wrapped up chatting about some Movie Watch news and God of War. Earlier we discussed the Xbox backward compatibility stuff, Bethesda and Game Pass, and now Jacob. What news do you have?
Well, DC Comics is getting another fighting game. Unfortunately, it's not Injustice. Kids. It's going to be a mobile title. 2v2 free-to-play brawling. And it's named after one of the current events, KO. So it's going to be called DC KO, or as everyone is referring to it, as Dicko.
Dicko.
Hey, sorry. Kids.
A quick shout out to all the new followers. We just got 4 new followers. I can't see the names because of how my screen is now, but thank you to all of you.
So with
no Siri, Dicko, I'm not talking to you. Jesus Christ.
Really? So your Siri responds to Dicko.
Yeah, Dicko. Hey, Dicko. No, it didn't work.
Which clip that.
Hey, kids.
And that gets another follow. Thank you.
Well, on the plus side, in this game, Constantine is going to be one of the fighters, and he's one of my favorites. So that's pretty cool. As it turns out, Hasbro really continues to just...
eat all the dicks?
Well, just continue not admitting that they don't know what the fuck they're doing with anything. And their big gaming strategy has caused a $56 million write down. So they, back in 2022, they had announced the creation of 6 brand new internal game studios. We know one of them was working on a G.I. Joe game. There's one that's working on quote unquote something spooky, but they haven't announced it yet. There was one that was working on a new sci-fi RPG franchise called Exodus, and Invoke Studios was working on a Dungeons and Dragons title that was called Warlock. And of course there's Magic the Gathering Arena. But yeah, so everything has gone to shit. They've closed 2 of the studios, and Invoke, Archetype, Skeleton Key, and Atomic Arcade are the only ones left. And they're going to try to figure out what the hell they're doing with Exodus. So, woo. And this is after they essentially gave away the license to Power Rangers to Playmates, because they were just like, yeah, we're out of ideas of what to do with the action figures. We just bought the property, but we don't know what the fuck we're doing with it. So that's cool.
I love it.
I'm a little thankful and surprised that Bree did not hop in and beat me to the news. But some Disney Dreamlight Valley news. First off, I'm back in it.
Okay. I saw that.
Winnie the Pooh DLC has dropped, and so far I've got Winnie the Pooh and Eeyore in my town. I still have to go back and play like all the Hercules shit and pretty much everything I missed out on in the last like 6 months, because I just haven't...
Winnie the Pooh, we know what brings Jacob back to games.
Big muscly men covered in poo, probably.
Yeah.
But next week starts up
Dicko.
Next week starts up a new Star Path, which is going to be like, apparently it's going to be like 80s, but also retro city urban themed. I don't think they know what the fuck they're talking about. But a bunch of like the fashion stuff, and also one of the companions are inspired by the Aristocats.
That's a deep cut.
Which, you know, if we want to go with the aristocrats joke, I mean, that plays right into the whole muscly men covered in shit.
And Deco.
So there's that. Wreck-It Ralph.
Beefy men slapping meat. Hell yeah.
Speaking of big beefy men, Wreck-It Ralph is finally coming to the game. He's been teased since the very beginning, showing up in the original like promo reels. But for whatever reason, when the game launched, he just wasn't there. And now he finally is. And he is a free content update. So
hey, that's always cool. Good.
Yeah. So excited about that. And then I have Movie Watch news.
It's Movie Watch. There.
Oh, Well, dang, that was disappointing. All right, what? Well,
we already went crazy before.
Yeah, I
what do you need? Okay.
I don't know. Maybe like
big sweetie men sweating meat.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, so it's Comic Con. Like. Shut up.
Sorry, Matt.
It's San Diego Comic Con time. All right, Hasbro for some reason has the rights to make action figures based on the upcoming Street Fighter movie, even though other toy companies have the rights to make like Street Fighter action figure. Like the whole thing's a fucking mess. But anyways, Hasbro's making the movie action figures, and they've been showing off some of them. So you can see Akuma, Ken, Ryu, and Chun-Li there. And the packaging also, and well, the packaging, but also like the display at Comic-Con is also showing off Guile, M. Bison, and Blanca.
What about Zangief?
Nothing yet.
We need
maybe he's gonna bitches. What I'm figuring is that he'll probably be like wave two or whatever, because it seems like there's going to be 8 figures in the first wave. But there's one that is unannounced, and ooh, Hasbro may have accidentally spoiled the movie for everyone.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes.
I don't think you should say it. I know it's news, but if there's people who want to see the movie, let's not ruin it.
Well, the thing is that we don't know in what regard that this character has to anything, but it is unexpected. And yeah.
Is it someone since from the game or is it a cameo character?
It is somebody from the game.
Okay. Is it Dan?
Originally I was actually going to announce that it was Dan, but I think Dan actually might be in the movie
already. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. No, I was really hoping for a Joe action figure. Not you, the Street Fighter character.
Yeah, whatever. You can have me too. No, a Funko on my shelf you can have.
But yeah, so new character possibly spoils the film.
Interesting.
The article is posted to the Facebook page for this podcast if you're interested in checking it out, but because Joe said no, I will not say.
Yeah, I'd rather err on the side of caution with that one. People could check our Facebook. Why don't you pimp our Facebook page, Jacob? What is it?
It is facebook.com/the SML podcast, where you'll find plenty of news, podcast posts, and shit posts. Oh, yeah. Also, Hasbro
nothing of value.
No, absolutely nothing of value. Hasbro has also shown off their Legend of Zelda action figures, which are based on Tears of the Kingdom, I believe. But they're also going to be making the figures for the movie.
And we're almost at 500 Facebook followers. Good job, Jacob.
Thank you. All that shit posting paid off.
Yeah. No, it didn't. What else you got?
That's all I got.
All you got?
All I got.
All you got. Oh, should we dive into reviews then?
I guess we could.
No, no pressure. No pressure.
No pressure?
No, there's no pressure? Okay, good.
Yep.
You okay, Bri?
I'm good. I'm very
good. You good? You ready?
Yep. I'm good. Good.
Sure. Do I need to play more sound effects?
Nope.
What the fuck? Was that to the dick?
Oops.
Yay!
Love it. First game to talk about tonight is The Mound, Omen of Cthulhu, developed by Ace Team, published by Nacon. It released July 15th. Xbox Play Anywhere, PS5, and PC for $29.99. In the cursed and hostile jungle, danger lurks around every corner. Lovecraftian horrors warp reality as madness closes in, while you explore ever deeper in search of infinite riches buried within the mound. Like the name of the game. Bri, what is The Mound, Omen of Cthulhu?
So this is a first-person, like, loot extraction game. You'll explore the jungle as one of four preset conquistador-type characters in a co-op 17th-century Lovecraftian horror adventure in search of answers and, of course, loot. You start out with a single-player prologue that gives you an idea of the story. It's a Spanish expedition that is not sanctioned by the crown. This is like a private endeavor, and we want to bring back items with this special metal called Tulu. You start out each mission from the hub, which is a Spanish galleon. It's a cool area to explore, actually. There's NPCs you can chat with or upgrade things with, like the cook gives better rations if you hunt. There's a loot player you can find songs for to play while you wait for your team. There's even a dog you can pet. You get documents and letters on expeditions that help fill out the story, and you can have them read to you by an NPC on the hub if you go to the document storage location on the ship. So it's like voice narrated. It's good voice acting, too. The leader chooses an expedition on the map when you're ready to start. The map is a little wonky to navigate, but overall, it's fine. You have a quest selection with different difficulties and different areas that you've unlocked by finding maps and logbooks of people who previously made it further into the jungle or the beach than, there's caves, there's also all sorts of places to explore. Each mission has a goal, like finding a logbook or a certain amount of loot value. Once the mission is selected, you enter the gear prep phase. Here you select from a bunch of low-level gear like muskets, rapiers, hatchets, and machetes, bow and arrow, stuff like that. And that you want to take on your expedition. There are sometimes helmets and breastplates, bandages, healing rations that you can bring with you as well. And then these all take up valuable gear slots. So you'll need those gear slots to bring back loot. So you need to choose wisely. You can also store things on your cart that goes with you too. But you can also buy gear for your mission from the vendor, like a Tulu metal finder, a crucifix, a torch, if you have money to do so. And like the gear you have is partly based on how high a level you are, if you've discovered items beforehand, if you have money available. You can also use an anvil and money to upgrade existing items before you go. Sometimes there aren't enough gear for everyone on your team to have what they want, though, so communication is helpful in this stage of the game. This phase reminded me a little of Phasmophobia. There's a couple other elements of the game that reminded me of as well, so just keep that in the back of your mind. As far as, you know, like what the game is kind of like, or, you know, games that you might, if you enjoy, you might enjoy this as well. So once you're done with the gear phase, you get your team to the robot area and wait for countdown. And the countdown is ominous, and I love it. During a mission,
how is it ominous? Is it just like the
it's,
music?
It's like this atmosphere. It's like this bass, and it's the timing of the countdown. It's cool. I don't know how else to describe it.
Just like just, really just, intimidating music.
Kind of, yeah, yeah. It's very simple, like this? Though. Yes. during your mission, I mentioned there's a cart to bring your loot back that also has limited space, but it tallies your value. So you aren't just bringing back golden gems, you're bringing back food, supplies like wood and leather, extra weapons you find, and stuff like that. That all adds up. Missions can have time limits. The longer you're in the forest, in some areas, for example, you might get a warning that you have 4 hours until the forest wakes up. The timer is in-game, so it'll say 4 hours in-game. In real life, it's like 5 to 10 minutes equals an hour, maybe. After that, the enemies come out en masse, and you can only mostly run to the exit at that point. Once you've satisfied your contract, that's the mission you signed up for, your contract value, or you run out of time or supplies, it's time to get you and your team back to the boat. Once back, as long as at least one member of your team survives, you go into the assessment phase. You are judged by your captain and your quartermaster on the quality of goods you brought in. The gear you brought with you, assuming you have any left, also counts towards your assessment. If you succeeded in your contract, you get paid and you get money and XP. Some other elements of this game remind me a little of Helldivers 2. where you choose your missions, bring back samples to upgrade with, and generally that once you get some higher level gear, you start to feel a little more confident in what you're doing. But this is its own thing. The pacing of the game is slower. This is not high action all the time, and that's good, because you're supposed to explore and be afraid of what is around the next corner, not knowing if that person is your teammate or not, or if that's a deer rustling in the bushes or a monster. So I was playing with my buddy Jay, and he was killing a deer that popped out of the bushes, and then he got attacked by a monster that jumped out on top of him, and in the scuffle, I apparently hallucinated that there was a monster in front of me next to a dead deer, and so I attacked my friend instead of attacking the monster. Friendly fire is totally a thing in this, by the way.
Ooh.
Yeah. I like that. So players on your team can have different things on their screens. Sometimes there are two of one character. That's bad, because you don't know who is who at first. People or monsters may be invisible with a slight glow to the air around them, or sounds will be wrong, or a horrifying fog will roll in, or everything will just be covered in blood. There can be traps on one person's screen. I'm not even waiting
for the end of this review. This is already on my wish list.
All right, there you go. There can be traps on one person's screen that another won't see, and a shiny loot pool in the middle that really isn't there. There is fall damage. You can eat rations or food to heal. You can apply bandages to stop the bleeding if you're bleeding out, which totally happens more than I would like. If you die in the mission, not all is lost, potentially. You get swallowed by the mound and reallocated as an NPC. If your teammates can knock the corrupted version of you down and get you back to the cart, they can res you. There are also items like ammonia salts that you can use to res people if you catch them before the ground swallows them up and corrupts them. Gear and loot stays in their pockets, but sometimes weapons can be lost. I had weapons break or get knocked out of my hands. Pressing B drops your weapons or your items, which takes some getting used to.
Oh no, that sounds like a terrible oversight.
No, well, I'll answer that later in my notes. You collect items with Y. You can glean arrows sometimes off the ground or enemies if you shoot a bow. Guns rarely have enough ammo. And did I mention that making noise is a bad idea? There's an element of stealth to this game. You can use your weapons to break the brush. Sometimes you can walk into branches and it'll alert enemies. You can kick locks on chests to get them open, but that might also alert enemies. So there's like a mild stealth element to this as well. I'm just like, I have so many notes on this in so little time. Audio and graphics are tops in this. Take your time,
do what you need.
Oh, I know. I have a few other stories I might throw at you toward the end of my notes here. I found that the visual effects, like fog and rain and water movement and plant life, were all part of this experience. Like, everything wants to kill you. It's dark and foreboding. It has a great visual look. Directional audio and storms were, like, absolutely a treat. The little creaks and groans of the ship, the rustling in the bushes, the monster groans were great. Let's talk about the hallucinations for a minute. Like, there is this, the psychological element to this is part of the fun. And so these little hallucinations, these other things going on are just like a really fun part of the experience. You look forward to those moments where things are wrong and you're not sure whether you need to kill the person to the left or the person to the right. Because there's only like four character models to start with. You get more as you progress later into the story, but you can only have four people in a squad. So if suddenly there's five or six people, you know something's wrong. And they will the AI for this, or whatever you want to call it, will mimic things that you would normally do. It's really good about that. So, yeah. If you have a dedicated group to play with, this is much more of a fun and rewarding experience. Communication is a big deal. It helped that I was playing mostly with my friend Jay, who I've been playing with for years. We kind of know what to do. We know how to communicate with each other. We had an idea of what the game was going in, so just the two of us, we kind of figured it out. It's not as much fun solo, but you can add an ally bot when playing solo, or turn that off in the settings. Also, public matches. I did play quite a few of them to see the difference between that and playing with people I know. You can choose matches based on host platform, language, location, etc. It's just a matter of finding an open lobby where the people aren't jerks.
Yeah.
I found a lot of lobbies where no one was talking, and it was hard to know with people randomly coming and going whether they were friend or foe. At one point, I found a French lobby that was the only one that was open. I tried to speak French with them, but I just couldn't keep up with the video game specific language or the speed at which they were talking. And then they punched me repeatedly until I left.
Nice.
You can set passwords or have private lobbies. You can kick people from your lobby. But like, if you have an open lobby, like, why be a jerk? I don't know. I don't get it. There is a cool thing that can happen if you're using the proximity chat. As opposed to party chat, which you can do with an open mic or push to talk, where the game will record things happening and repeat that audio. So your teammates might be fooled. I watched a video of some gameplay, and it was a loop of some guy cackling because he had died earlier in a community way. And the game looped his audio later. So it seemed like it was legit him like cackling again in the exact same way. And like just watching that in the video. So I look forward to seeing some of that. Like if your character is waving a lot, using the emote pad or whistling a lot, you might still be fooled because it will record that kind of data on you during your match. And matches can last anywhere from like a half hour to a couple of hours, depending on what you're doing, where you're going in the game, how far you are into the story and the types of missions that are available. As I mentioned, other ways you can communicate is to whistle or wave. You have a little RB button that you have a little wheel up there as well. Some other settings of note, inverted controls are a thing. There are four control presets.
Thank you, Christ.
So while you cannot directly remap the buttons, if you just absolutely hate using the Y button to collect things, there are four presets of control styles that you can match to your play style better. Some other things to mention. Mission selection is based on the server host. So if I'm, say, bringing Lloyd in on a higher level mission, he may not be prepared. But also in this example, I as a host can't choose a lower level mission after a while because there won't be any left for me to do. So if I wanted to do a lower level mission in someone new, I would have to let them host. And this game can be a challenging experience, even on easy. There are a good variety of enemies, tentacles, things with extra appendages. Not everything moves upright or like you'd expect a humanoid to move. They will mock you at times. They will pretend to be you. It's eerie and it's wonderful. And the tension in the missions and the atmosphere is like half the fun.
Tentacles for Aki, appendages for Jacob.
And there's also fish people, of course. There's some good Lovecraft just mythos, you know, cuts in here that they've brought some things out that are fun, some things familiar, some things a little bit, you know, more of a deep cut. There are later missions that don't have the cart to move you along. There are other objectives on, say, portal missions, of which I've done like one. It's not all beaches and jungles in Peru either. There's Mapuche settlements, there's caves, there's a temple of Yig, and the mound itself. Busting myself up to a high enough level to get this review done, unfortunately, meant playing with a lot of randos. Jumping into higher level missions more than I was handled to equip. And people who had no patience for randos in their random lobby. I digress. I'm having a blast with this.
It sounds like it's a really good one. Like, I've already thrown this on my wish list. It's affordable as hell, given what it is. This clocks in at $30. What are your thoughts?
So yeah, the price is fantastic for a game like this. I think this makes entry for a group of people to play together much easier, like low barrier to entry. I felt like the Chthonic Mythos and the Cosmic Horror was really well represented. I liked getting the story in the drips and drabs with the good voice acting. There may be some balance issues with enemies as you level. I would have liked if you could have farmed lower level missions a little easier. Devs have already addressed some of this in an early patch, so they are here to support their work, and I appreciate that. But don't go into this expecting Left 4 Dead. There is nuance to this game. It requires communication and patience to get far. It's not going to be for everyone. For me, this is a buy it. I'm really hoping I can get the other two members of my crew on board to play this so we can progress more as a team toward the inevitable conclusion of the story. So, yeah.
Very cool. There is also a deluxe edition upgrade for $10, which includes... has a mission pack, an exclusive mission, taking you to a unique area of the jungle. The Fortune Hunter's character pack, which includes two exclusive playable characters. And the Abyssal Gear pack, which has exclusive skins for the knife, lamp, musket, and flintlock musket. Matchlock and
flintlock. I think that is totally worth it if you're into this game. If you've seen a little bit, you watch a little bit, you hear this, and you hear what you like what you hear, get the deluxe edition for the extra 10. I wish that I had that, honestly. If there's an upgrade for it later, I may pick it up, because having that extra mission, yeah, and all that, that sounds awesome. Those two extra playable characters are pretty cool too, so I got to play with them as a bonus through someone else having the deluxe edition. So yeah,
nifty.
Yeah.
And then I believe this was a pre-order bonus, but there is a Lost Explorer sword pack, which has two swords for $5.
Nice. So.
All right. Yeah. Next up, Hell Clock, developed by Rogue Snail, published by Mad Mushroom. It released July 9th on Xbox Series X and S and PS5 for $24.99. Plays Peju, a warrior fighting to rescue the soul of the counselor, his fallen mentor. With each descent, time warps, and your power grows as you confront the dark forces that claimed his head and trapped his soul. Every second counts as you battle the undead forces of your oppressors. Risk delving deeper for powerful loot and face the nightmarish incarnations of those who sought to bury the truth. Jacob, what is Hell Clock?
So Hell Clock is based on actual events, or at least the setting is. And you play as this guy after a lot of your town has been killed, and like the bad guys had come after not only just the men, but also like, you know, the ones that usually get spared, like the old women, the children, like they're wiping out everybody. And so it's your responsibility to like recover people's souls, rebuild the town as you can, and, you know, just overthrow the bad guys in the end of it. And it, I guess, like the way that it kind of worked out, for, like the way that I thought about it is that it reminded me a lot of like the original Torchlight. There's a ton of levels that you have to go through. But you only have about 7 minutes per round to be able to do as much damage as you possibly can. You know, grab what you can, upgrade your skills, and take out bosses and stuff like that. And there's also going to be quests that you have to do on the side. Like, it could be like, oh, recover the soul of like this one guy, or rescue this one guy who's down, like who got trapped down there, like recover this one item and stuff like that.
For the people worried about the time restrictions, there are certain stages where the time stops, and there are ways to replenish clock time.
Yeah, and also if you play it on like the, it's not like easy,
but the relaxed mode where you can disable the timer completely if you want,
which is what I did, because I, like, I just wanted to like experience the game and like be able to really explore everything, because that's one of the things I like doing in games, and like just like looking around every single nook and cranny.
Yeah.
Like, you know, one of my friends still makes fun of me to this day. Like, you know, I'm looking for story over here. But
cranny or nookie granny?
Have you seen some of those gilfs? Yes, sir. Anyway,
the skill upgrade tree, you can also find ways to expand the timer that way.
Okay.
Here, I mentioned that quick.
All right. But yeah, and so there is also skill trees that you get to mess with after each run. and those are permanent upgrades, and it can do all sorts of stuff. It can extend life. It can, you know, get you more ammo. It can, you know, make your weapons more powerful. You know, there's some magic powers that, like, or some attacks that are labeled as magic. Like, there's also passive abilities. So it's very much like a roguelite shooter version of like what, as I said, it reminded me of Torchlight. Like, that was my frame of reference for it, for that kind of game. And so at, like, so you're like the bottom of the, or sorry, the basement of this, like, one building is kind of like your hub. And that's where you're bringing back all these people or their souls, or you're bringing back supplies. Like, one of the things that you have to do is bring in wood so you can repair this bell. And by repairing the bell, that's actually what lets you mess with the skill tree. And yeah, so that's the setup for it. The combat, first off,
there's also relics too. You forgot to mention the relics.
Well, I said items.
No, I am in love with the relics. You can actually, again, in the skill tree, you could, there are options to expand the relic screen, and I am in love with finding combos for my repeater. I use the repeater for everything, and it's at the point where if I shoot an enemy, it catches on fire and explodes, and then chain explodes everything around it.
I was going to say, I think mine does that too.
Yeah, I love this thing. I friggin' love this thing.
But so unlike other roguelites out there, like stuff like Grind Survivors or Greedland, this is one that definitely requires two hands on the controller, one for moving around, one for aiming. Aiming your gun, but also you have to just, like, you have various abilities. Weapons. Yeah, I'm getting there. Yes. Using abilities or weapons with, like, those are mapped to, like, the X, Y, A, B controls. And so you're moving through all these levels, trying to find various items and relics, you know, as Joe likes to say, and you're just blasting away everybody, and it is fantastic. Like, at first, like, it's a little overwhelming because that's how roguelites work at first. Like, you're going to get your ass kicked, but eventually you're going to start leveling up and you're going to start knocking the shit out of everybody. And that's when it gets really fucking good, because then as you figure out how everything works, like, oh, these things are explosive, so I should be aiming at those along with the monster. That way, in case, you know, my repeater's like scattered shot doesn't, you know, hit him initially, it might hit the barrel and then the barrel will explode and set everybody on fire. You get all that kind of stuff. Like, and there is other, like, it's not just fire. Like, there is a poison one. Oh, shoot. What was the other thing I did? I forget what the heck's in my setup. Like, there is a dash attack that I occasionally use. That thing was weird, though. I felt like it didn't actually do anything other than get me injured. like, yeah, it was supposed to be like one of those, it was supposed to be like one of those things where it's like you rush in and, like, you know, you knock the crap out of people, but if anything, it's just like, it was like you rush in and then they hit you.
I think it's meant to be more of a defensive dash. Like, you're not supposed to dash into the enemies, you're supposed to dash through them.
Well, what's the point of that?
Evasion, so you can shoot them. This isn't a melee-focused game, really. This is a ranged and shooter-pew-pew-focused game. So you don't want to get up close to enemies.
And as you're going through, obviously you can find new versions of the items that you have, and then you can recycle old ones, so then you have stuff to use to power up your abilities or relics further down the line. But yeah, like, it's a lot of fun, and, like, the bosses, like, everything is just, like, so well designed in it, and it's a really enthralling game, and I just, like, you know, the game would be like, hey, you know, you can go back now and end your run and, like, you know, take care of, like, whatever mission, like, the old lady had given me. And I'm just like, nah, I'm too busy killing shit. No, yeah. Thanks. Like,
This is one of the games where I feel like you, and that I'm like, this is one of my highlights of the year. I went into this kind of expecting just another, you know, shoot things, roguelike kind of thing. I am in love with this game. The action is fluid and satisfying. The item collection always has you getting more stuff, more upgrades, more collectibles. Like, it just feels very good and very welcoming to continue on. It wants you to keep playing. It doesn't seem to want to push you away.
And there's a story.
Yeah.
Like, crazy. Holy shit. Like, so many of these things are just like, all right, soldier, you go down to this planet and you kill these things, or like, you go to this level and you kill these things. Like, no, they're like, there's a story that unravels as you keep playing.
Well, I would compare this more to something like Hades than I would to, like, Greed Survivors or any kind of Survivors game.
I haven't played Hades, so
you should really play Hades.
Well, there's this podcast where, like, you know, I have to review games for, and, like, just, yeah.
How much Disney Dreamlight did you play?
Shut up. I haven't played it for 6 months. I am allowed to play with sweaty men covered in poo.
Anyway, Hell Clock.
Yes. So, yes, anyways, what? Hell Clock. Sorry, like I wasn't sure if we were done talking. Honestly, my only issue with it is that, like, there's no auto aim. Like, I would have appreciated something like that. Just like, so other similar games, like, you know, I can hold my my wife can sleep on me.
This isn't meant to be like those, though.
I know it's not. It's just something I would have liked. I'm not saying it, like, you know, sorry, guys, don't buy it because of this. It's just something I would have liked.
You're expecting a completely different genre. You're asking them to make a complete different genre of a game.
Well, get on it. Nah, like, this is a really awesome game. Don't sleep on it. It's been out on PC for a bit. I think, like, a year at least. And it's now out on consoles. So if you haven't experienced it yet, I think you definitely should check it out.
My one wish is that this was a Play Anywhere title, because Ashley would be watching Netflix and I'm like, I really want to play Hell Clock. It doesn't have
Play Anywhere
support, and it doesn't have cloud support. It is just console right now. So hopefully one of those gets added in the future.
Oh, because then at least with cloud, you could, like, move to another TV.
Or I could play on my computer.
Oh, yeah, that's
fair. Just play in the browser.
Okay, yeah.
$25, your official verdict on Hell Clock.
Absolutely. It's one of the stronger titles that we've reviewed this year. Don't sleep on it. You should definitely check it out.
Yeah, I agree. An emphatic buy it on this one. So, moving on, next game to talk about is Sir, You Are Being Hunted, developed by Big Robot, published by Ocean Media, who is awesome enough to give us some extra giveaway copies for this game. Before I get into it, should we give one away?
Sure.
I think we should give one away. Giveaway, draw, congrats to No Time for Games, just won a copy of a game that they have no time for. Developed by Big Robot, published by Ocean Media, released July 16th on Xbox One and Series X and S for $19.99. Sir, You Are Being Hunted is a procedurally generated British horror in which tweed-wearing robots hunt you for sport. Roam the landscape, scavenge for food, hide breathlessly in the undergrowth, flee in terror, and even fight back with stolen weapons. Escape from these robot-infested islands with violence, trickery, and stealth. Aki and Bree, both of you played this. Aki, start us off. What is Sir, You Are Being Hunted?
Okay, so this is a stealth-focused game where you're trying to find pieces of this meteorite that landed around the island and bring them back to this stone circle that they apparently belong at. All the while, there are a bunch of different types of robots hunting you for sport in ye olden day clothing, very much treating you like the fox that's getting hunted. So very fun. You're going around the city trying to find stuff in order to survive because you have a hunger meter and a thirst meter and a health meter, obviously. I feel like there's one more meter, but I don't remember what the hell it is.
It's like vitality and something. Yeah, there is different than your health, but yeah.
Yeah, that I think that involves your ability to run. And yeah, so you have to find food on this island where there aren't people. Just robots now. There's a multitude of different types of robots. You got some that just run around with rifles trying to shoot you, some that float around, and if they see you in their little cone, they start blaring alarms, so all of the ones on the island you're at come running at you. There's some dog ones, there's giant ones that if they hit you, you fall over, and then they just kill you because they'll never let you back up, which is not very fun. And yeah, there's also every time you go into the game, you get to choose what kind of game you're playing. There's a mode that has no enemies just so you can get used to the different islands. There's also, I believe, an easy and a hard mode. You also get to choose what kind of environments you're coming across, because this place is made up of five different
Central
types
island
of islands,
and then one in each direction. Yep.
And you get to decide what the other four islands are that aren't the central, and they can be anything from like plains to, I believe, swamps, cities, and
there's castles and mountains. Yeah,
so you get a whole bunch of different areas, and you can have all of them all at once, which is nice. So you can actually see everything in one single game if you'd like, and then figure out what one you like, and then just make ones of just that. However, there's like 15 of these items you have to find, and you have to go to every island to find them all. And there's different amount of them on different islands, and there is a compass that you have, which can direct you somewhat towards things.
And there's like the little will-o-wisps that kind of like point you in the direction of some as well.
Yeah, if you find little floating blue butterflies, basically, yeah, that glow in the dark, they will lead you eventually to one that you haven't found. But your compass can also bring you to various important places, including towards those. You'll find a little circle that's filled in with gold that, if you're close, really close to one, just to direct you towards it. Otherwise, you have like a bunch of tents that have open circles under them that lead you to the various different boats or to the stone outcropping. They don't make any differentiation on the map towards that. So, you know, if you're trying to find it, you're just going to have to look around like a dipshit until you do, because that's fun. And then you get on the boats and you visit whatever island that boat brings you to, and you search that island, and you keep doing it until you find and bring back all 15. You do have a limited inventory space, and yeah, the meteorites take up a lot of room. So typically you're bringing one, maybe two with you, and then slotting them and then going back out. So the game is meant to be played fairly slow and over a long period of time. Just by mechanics, you kind of have to, regardless of what you'd like. And it says, yes, you can fight the enemies. No. You really can't, though, because enemies just infinitely spawn. If you kill one, another one just spawns. And if you kill one, chances are you were a loud bitch doing it, and now the entire island is heading directly for you, and now you're going to have to fight everything. And by the time you've killed all of them, chances are a couple more have spawned and are already on their way to you. So you're just going to get yourself killed doing that. So just don't bother fighting. It's a waste of time, which is a real shame, because if you could actually kill the enemies and clear out an area, that would have been great. Bree, I will let you talk now, because I've given the basis of the game, I think.
Yeah, I'm not sure what I was expecting with this game. It's like a little bit survival, it's a little bit horror, it's a little bit stealth, it's a first-person shooter with odd British robots hunting you for sport, you have to scavenge to survive. The inventory slots were like playing the save room game, where you have to move things around, and I did not find that was very easy on controller. I think you played this on PC, Aki?
Yeah, it's really easy to use to do it on PC, yeah, once you understand how to.
Yeah, it
do
is it not anyways. Easy on controller. So let me find that spot in my notes.
While you're looking for that, I guess I'll just point out it leaves much to be desired when it comes to tutorial.
Yeah, that's part of the section in my notes here, is that you get like a narrated intro, but there's really not much of a tutorial. It's like, here's a standing stone. You can save here. You can check your inventory here by looting this robot's body. And that's pretty much all the tutorial you get. It really needed some extra thing about buttons, like to use an item that was not your weapon. You have to drag your weapon from your inventory to your quick slot. I think you have 6 quick slots, but only weapons fit in your quick slots. You have to eat your food by pressing the LT button to use. It took me forever to figure that out. You can cycle between your weapons and your quick slots with your D-pad, which again, took me way too long to figure out. You can change from sir to madam. The only thing it really changes is the narrator says, "Madam, you are being hunted." But, you know, nice touch. I ran into some issues with stuttering. I fell through the floor a couple times, got stuck in a spot with enemies coming at me. This port for console might be part of a 13-year-old Steam game at this point. Like, I don't know that it got quality of life updates.
From what I've seen, I don't think it did. I think it's a direct port.
Yeah, yeah. So, it could use some help. Again, the buttons on it was not as well suited to controller as I would have liked. As far as stealth goes, you can kind of hide in bushes. You can use items to distract robots. You will find loads of just junk you can throw when you're looting buildings. It's hard to move stuff on controller, and you have very limited space. So obviously, you're going to spend a lot of time doing the save room game, moving your inventory around.
And there's just a lot of junk in general that you can't really use.
Yeah, like the at
all.
Food
like
is
there's
all...
dead rats all over the place. There's moldy
dead
food.
Rats, the bones.
There's bones. There's old boots, and you can't use them for anything.
No, you can't wear the boots. They're really just good for throwing to distract robots when you think they're getting too close to your direction.
Oh, that's what you do with that shit. Okay.
Yeah, that's most of what I did with that shit. And I think the stealth was tricky as hell. And yes. I think part of that is that this is an open world experience that is procedural. And that's not usually what you're expecting out of a stealth game. Like, you're expecting these curated locations for you to be able to like duck behind and like whatever. That is not the case. This is like completely raw. It's like the parkour of stealth. You are just like flying by the seat of your pants, and it makes it really hard.
Another thing that makes it pretty hard is the robots have a fairly drastic range of sight.
Yeah,
they will see you from pretty far away. They saw me. I was looking in their direction, and I didn't notice them, and they saw me and started running at me because when they see you, they get an exclamation point above their head and start running at you.
Yep.
And I saw that show up. I'm like,
what? Where's the enemy? And then you know, a few more seconds, I saw them like, son of a bitch.
Also, the only way to save is at the standing stone in the center island or the boats as you're traveling to other islands, which is... That makes this very challenging. Yeah, you basically have five places you can save.
Ouch.
There is one interesting aspect of the islands.
Yeah.
That if you travel in one direction and you hit water, that's as far as that direction's going to go.
Oh, but yeah, because there's turn things 90 in the degrees, water.
Well, not only that, but if you turn 90 degrees and you start walking in that direction, you will just cycle around the map back to the beginning area. Because, like, in the central area that I placed, I had water to the north and south, but if I traveled east and west, it would just circle you constantly.
Huh.
So I assume it does that in all of the areas. I stopped trying that very quickly because I realized in the central area, oh, I'm just looping from one section back to the other. That's not going to help me at all. So,
Coltrane, why are you pushing my microphone?
I think this had a just rubbing good, her face ambience on my
microphone right now. I don't know what the hell.
Yeah, good creepy ambiance to the setting of the game. Like, it's got this post-apocalyptic Britain landscape. And the graphics and audio were okay. There's actually some, like, individual settings you can do to, like, change the graphic options, even on console, for things like detailed distance and density to, like, water and shadow quality. And there's individual audio sliders for different things, like robots. Different, like the dogs can be louder if you want them, or quieter if you want them, from the tweed jacket robots, and stuff like that. So there's some decent settings that you can fiddle with. And when you build your world on each run, you can, you know, fiddle with different settings. There's even like different characters. You have like an aristocrat as the default, where you can choose the gamekeeper, the inventor, there's an officer, a cook, an artist, and they each have a different difficulty rating, like easy or medium. And they have different weaponry and ammunition they start with as well. So
yeah, they have completely different loadouts, basically. Like one of the characters has like a bunch of weapons on them, whereas another has a bunch of food, and the one that you start off with has jack shit.
Yeah, pretty much. You get a pipe and like a gun, and that's about it. Oh, and a plate, I think. Yeah.
Oh, a useless mine started plate with literally plate. Nothing.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, anything else to say about it, or should we dive into the price?
Good.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty good.
All right. Well, clocks in at $20. Coltrane is apparently not happy with that, but $20. What's your verdict on this one?
You want me to go first, Aki? I might have a few other words to try and figure this out.
Then I'll go first so you can figure those out for yourself.
Yeah.
For me, it's going to end up being a deny it for me. This is a stealth game, and it's one of the very few that I didn't get along with at all. I think the stealth is a bit too hard, and I like the concept behind the game. I don't really like the follow through of it, just from how far enemies see you, the difficulty, the lack of a tutorial, just how expansive the game is. Like 15 stones and you can only fit one, maybe two in your inventory at any given time. That's a long time. I spent hours and hours and hours in the game and found five of them out of 15. It's just too much, in my opinion. So I have to make it a deny it. Just cool concept wasn't a good enough follow through for me personally.
Bree, your thoughts?
I ended up watching some videos on this one, and I enjoyed that more than I did playing it, because I felt like this was supposed to be like this gem in the rough, and I couldn't find the fun as much as I wanted to. And I, watching other people, though, I think part of the challenge really is getting this set up right and having a little more instruction than there was on what you're supposed to do and how to do it. So, like, the best I can give this is a try it. It's a functional game once you figure it out. It's a little buggy but playable. It was not for me, but having watched others play this with more success showed me that it's worth more attention than just to deny it for me. Because the game is so British, I don't know how to not give a polite response. I don't fucking know.
How about a win it?
Yeah. Like, win it. Give it a try for yourself. Yeah.
Should we give one away?
Sure.
Let's do it. Let's give one away right now. Giveaway draw. Congrats to Injury. Just got a copy of the game.
All right.
All right. Let's move on.
Play it together.
Yeah.
I Love Finding Pups, developed by Boom Zap, published by Ocean Media, released July 14th on Xbox One, Series X and S for $6.99. Visit beautiful locations from across the globe while you find and collect adorable canine companions. I Love Finding Pups features classic hidden object gameplay across a wide variety of scenes with a great collection of mini games sprinkled throughout. Jacob, what is I Love Finding Pups? And does it somehow involve pups?
It does, in fact, involve puppies.
Sweet.
So, I Love Finding Pups is a hidden object game, and believe it or not, you're trying to find pups in the scenes, but you're also trying to find various items that are on a list. And thankfully the game does have a magnifier. Of course, it's also like your cursor is slow as hell. No matter, like, actually, this one I don't believe has any a setting to mess with it. It's just naturally slow as hell and you're stuck with it. But you're brought into all these different scenes. You know, they're happy, they're relaxing. You have to find something like a hand axe or like a ladder or a fireman's hat, all while finding a certain amount of puppies in each thing. If you've played any of Ocean Media's hidden object games, you know what you're expecting with this. You know, you have some of the stuff is that gets hidden is, in my opinion, straight up BS. Like, I'm just like, I don't know how you expected anybody to see that unless they had their face like absolutely in front of the screen. And the mini games are, they're not particularly challenging, but then again, the age, like the market for this game, I don't think is, first off, I usually don't think that they'd own an Xbox, but who knows? But, it's definitely,
hey, your kids have access to an Xbox.
Yeah. So, but my kids aren't like old people.
You are.
And all that's,
well, you are an old people, so that's fair.
Yeah, I am over the age of 40, so I mean, like, and I do enjoy soft food. Yeah. Anyway, like, it's a standard hidden puzzle or hidden object game. If you like cute puppies, there's plenty of them in each round that you have to do, or each stage, whatever you want to call it. It's fine.
Now, are these drawn scenes or are they realistic scenes?
They're realistic.
Gotcha.
And the puppies are like definitely like stock photo. And it's not like you're going to be getting like all Pomeranians in one puzzle. It's going to be like you'll get like a golden retriever, you'll get a Chihuahua, you'll get a Yorkie, like you'll get all sorts of different breeds in it.
So they mix.
So as I said, yeah, like it's fine. This is not exactly something I'd be like, oh my god, everybody, you need to stop, buy this game immediately. But if like you like hidden object games in a relaxing time, this ain't bad.
I know what you're going to like in this game.
And if puppies are a big draw, then even better.
I know what else you like in this game. Not only does it have a zoom, it has a double zoom.
I know, I did enjoy that. But as I said, the cursor is still slow as hell. So
are you.
Use at your own risk.
$7. What's your verdict on Finding Pups?
I would have been more cool with it at 5, but like 7's not offensive. I'd wait for a sale slash try.
7's the going rate for Ocean titles. They keep it pretty affordable. Is it? Yeah. Most of their stuff's okay. $6.99.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, then yeah, okay. If you're into this type of game, you know, then yeah, it's not a bad price. If you're not and you really just want the achievements, then wait for a sale.
Gotcha. Next up, Darktown Secrets Lost Lulu, developed by Jet Dog Studio, published by Ocean Media, released July 15th, Xbox One, Series X and S for $6.99. A desperate plea from Lady Margaret tells of the sudden disappearance of her beloved dog, Lulu. At first, it seems like a simple matter of a missing pet. But as Casey arrives at the imposing mansion, it becomes clear this is no ordinary investigation. Lulu's past is shrouded in shadows, and Lady Margaret may not be telling the whole truth. Bree, tell us about the third game in our Ocean Trilogy of the Night.
So this is another hidden object puzzle game. Lady Margaret has lost her dog and employed the help of you, a detective, to find her beloved pooch. We're going to do that by looking for clues in a bunch of random stuff in locations around Lady Margaret's home and town until we find Lulu the dog.
So how did you get your own game, by the way?
What? Lady Margaret? Yes. Yeah. Yes, I know. The story is told in text between hidden object puzzle scenes. Onto those scenes, if you've never played one of these games before, you'll see a scene on the screen with a bunch of objects placed all over, and you'll be given a list of things to find by clicking on the pictures with your cursor. So you might need to find the number 4, a shark, a medieval helmet, an airplane, all in one picture. The shark might be a toy, the number 4 might be printed on a street corner, the helmet a display on a storefront, and the airplane is a toy that the kid on the street is playing with, just as an example of what you might find. There are multiple methods of communicating what to find in a scene. Sometimes you'll have a list of objects that refills as you find things with a special item you're looking for as the big clue in the scene. Sometimes you'll need to find multiples of a kind of obsession, like one plank, a handful of cats, 5 bottles, 4 bowling pins, a couple
and
of
a
chairs.
Yeah,
and sometimes you'll need to find pairs of things. Pairs aren't always direct, like 2 cherries, 2 cupcakes, 2 pinwheels, but they aren't identical, and a computer mouse could be paired with an animal mouse, and that made pair mode hard sometimes. And then there's contour mode, where you find things based on shadows. Alongside hidden objects, you get more puzzles. Jigsaw-style puzzles, like torn-up notes you found in the previous hidden object scene, and a few other jigsaw puzzle types show up every so many scenes. You can use hints with almost no penalty, but there are achievements for finishing a puzzle with no misclicks. If you click everywhere rapidly, the screen will freeze over and kind of box you out for a little bit. The art on this looks like a mixture of... No cheesing it. The art on this looks like a mixture of stylized stock photo type painted backgrounds with characters that look like portraits done in an oil painting. There wasn't much in the way of music, but there is a music player in the bonus collection if you want to hear it on command. The story wasn't too long, didn't outstay its welcome. Being a collector's edition, this has a bunch of bonus puzzles as well, though. There's a whole bonus campaign that furthers the story of Lulu with the same type of progression as the main story, with hidden object and jigsaw puzzles in a shorter story experience with new characters. And then you have a series of jigsaw puzzles. Honestly, I felt like it was way too many. That you can use to revisit scenes and see new characters a little bit better. I did feel like some of the jigsaw puzzles were irritating, and so that there's a lot of them was a challenge. Pieces didn't always land where you put them, or click into place, and moving them to the sides was not helpful, usually. There were some buggy achievements that got fixed in a patch after launch on the 22nd was when the patch came through. I just had to redo one puzzle. Other than that, I had time with this one.
All right, well, it clocks in at $7, the Ocean Special. What do you think?
It is not the best hidden object puzzle game I've ever played, but it was pretty good. I happen to be a fan of Jet Dog's other series, The Harmony Chronicles, better. I think the price is reasonable. I'm going to give this a try.
Sounds good. And we will have 2 more Ocean games next week from Jacob to talk about. Right, Jacob?
All right.
Yes, now that I've unmuted myself.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, The Crimson Maid, developed by Grim Talon and Darkania Works, published by Wales Interactive, released July 14th as an Xbox Play Anywhere title, PS5, and PC for $14.99. The Crimson Maid is a narrative adventure that blends first-person exploration, visual novel storytelling, and light puzzle solving. Step into the shoes of Marius as he reconnects with his fractured family and becomes captivated by Irina, a young, beautiful maid who's already unsettled the household. Uh-oh. Unravel the secrets of the family's troubled past, and through your choices, determine Marius's ultimate fate. I believe everyone had some time with this one. Aki, start us off. What's going on in The Crimson Maid?
Okay, oops. So... yes, very nice ones. So in this, you're coming back from basically priest school, more or less, because your father...
Oh, seminary, holy shit. Priest school.
Oh, whatever. God. I don't care what it's called. Because
I'm a pastor's kid. I would know.
I don't care. Because your daddy's dying, and you're like, oh, I need to come back and take care of him, because, you know, Bible and shit. And yeah, you head there. Turns out your dad is suffering from what seems to be pretty bad dementia. And your mother and your younger brother have been taking care of him. And your family doesn't exactly what I would call get along. Your dad was okay with you going off to become a priest. Your mother really fucking hated it. And she also seems to really fucking hate your brother for...
I hate my brother too.
No real reason. And because of that, he really fucking hates you. Because you're the family favorite. And soon after, you get introduced to the very beautiful Crimson Maid, Irina, who you immediately start falling for. And you have to figure out what the hell's going on with your dad, what's going on with the family, all while you're falling to temptation, because that's what happens when you're a mega virgin, apparently. So, yeah, you have a lot of conversations with people. You get to interact with the environment for the level. They're all fairly contained little sections, and you get to find occasional puzzles around and bird feed that you have to find the birdhouse to feed the birds to get pieces of notes from, and so on and so forth. And yeah, it's a pretty fun little game. I'm having fun with it. Anyone want to chime in with more information about the game? I will leave it to y'all.
Well, I mean, like, there is plenty of stuff to find in this game. Some of it is required for the game to progress. Other is just, you know, for all of us who... Well, you know, those of us who enjoy, you know, looking in corners for story. And so, like, you get more information, and the... what's the priest guy's name? I forget.
Marius.
Thank you. Marius is writing it all down in his journal, so you can reference it for later. But, you know, you get to talk... with everybody, and you can also, I mean, there's multiple responses for plenty of stuff, and so you can kind of mess with, like, how people are reacting to you and that kind of stuff. Now, I'm going to be honest, I picked up this game I requested that, you know, Joe get me this game because it's Wales Interactive, and I am very used to, like, their FMV titles, and so, like, when I get, it's like, oh, okay, sweet, it's Wales Interactive, yay, new title I'm gonna check out, and then, like, I fire it up, and I'm like, oh, this is not an FMV. Well, crap.
Look at okay. The games before you request them, Jacob.
Hey, this was a happy surprise, thank you very much, is what I'm going off to say. And it's just, everything, like the whole environment is very beautiful to look at. I found the dialogue to be pretty well written. The story's intriguing. But it's just honestly, especially like when you're outside, it's just really nice. Like it's just really well done.
Yeah, the graphics are great. They're full of vibrant details. And like in the interiors have these layers of pattern and color that I've come to expect from this dev combo. It's very visually rich.
They did, Last Days of Lazarus, I believe.
They did. Yeah. Grimtalin and Darkania did Last Days of Lazarus together. And that was well done. So yeah.
But yeah, this was surprisingly cool. It very much wasn't what I was expecting, but yeah, like I'm enjoying it. Like I'm looking forward to finding out the conclusion on this. Well, I mean, I assume that there's probably multiple endings. Did you guys finish?
No,
I did not finish it.
Oh, okay.
We were chiming in on your thing. So
yeah, I think there's like 16 chapters to this one, and I think you can replay the chapters as well.
Yes, you can at any time you want.
Yeah, which is nice. And that's kind of, I think, something that they've done in their previous games as well, which I appreciate. I will say, if you're going to stream this and you're not prepared for the amount of nudity that's like pretty much right in the front, there is a nudity button you can switch in the settings. It'll ask you right when you start the game as well. So again, appreciated that. Right. Yeah, it is. It was something I had to do when I streamed it just because I wasn't sure how bad it was going to be and I didn't want to get in trouble with Twitch.
How bad was it?
Well, like I said, she's fully naked in a pond when you first meet her. So,
she has turns around and has full frontal. Tits.
Yeah, yeah.
Leave it to Aki for that one. All right, $15 on this one. What does everyone think?
Oh, wow, that's it. Yeah, definitely
buy it.
Yeah, definitely buy it for $15. Totally worth it.
He's hot. I'm totally for it.
How about for $13.49 instead, because it's on sale for a couple more days?
Even better.
Yeah.
There you go. All right, someone gift it to me. Next up, Tiny Witch, developed by Creative Hand, published by Silesia Games. It released July 22nd, Xbox Play Anywhere. July 23rd, PS4 and PS5 for $9.99. The Magic Shop's contract binds you to do your best to satisfy its customers. Pound, boil, and mix resources on your alchemy table to serve perfect magical minions. Upgrade your shop and unlock new recipes. Stay sharp and don't mix things up. You don't want to face the wrath of a cranky dungeon master. Bree, what is Tiny Witch?
So this is a cute pixel art shop sim with soothing and somehow uplifting music with an adorable tiny witch. When you start the game, you get two difficulties to choose from, casual or challenge mode. I stuck with casual for the purpose of review, but to get all the achievements, you need to complete the challenge mode. Just fair warning. Our hero is a little witch named Sophie. A mysterious cat appeared and offered to make her dream of making an alchemy shop. But in our contract, it shows that the store is cursed and Sophie can't leave until we reach 10 day worth of sales goals and turn a profit to break this curse. Thankfully, our cat friend is good on his investment in you and he helps out. Each day you serve customers and get paid. You have a daily sales goal that shows on the screen at the beginning of each day. Customers have time limits on them, so you have to hustle to get this done. They're buying like minions that they use for I don't know what purpose in their farms and dungeons and things, and they're paying, so who cares? There are day shifts and night shifts for you to play in, and some dungeon owners are nocturnal or have different moods based on the time of day, so you'll have to be mindful of that. And the night shift is more intense, but it's also shorter. You have to learn recipes and create ghosts and zombies and the like using techniques and ingredients. So you have spirit dust that you turn into souls in a cauldron, and mortar and pestle to take the souls and make rotting meat. Then you have an assembly table where you take two or three of a kind of thing and then turn them into the customer order. It takes like two souls to make a ghost, and one soul and one rotting meat to make a zombie, and so on. There are four levels or sequences to this game that have different styles and quirks. And as you go, you get money for your products and tips for your speediness and efficiency. Your professionalism helps too, letting the customer know that you are still working on their order while you wait for an adorable little candle timer on your cauldron to do their thing. Helps keep up the patience on the part of your client and can earn you tips too. So like your customers have like little meters, and if you go talk to them, their meter will like refill, but not all of them are the same way. So some things to watch out for are like impatient customers can attack you. Your cauldron bubbling over will ruin your ingredients, and that makes a mess. Angry customers start off with their meter going faster and don't accept apologies. It's a hectic little game. But the bursts are short. You get time in between to take a break, study your recipes, upgrade your equipment, and just breathe. There is a chest you can store ingredients in. You can burn stuff if you make too much of. There's even a little broom to clean up messes when the pipes burst and get in your way. And when you are buying equipment, you might also be able to pick up a pet. I like this game a bunch, and I think if you're in the headspace for a busy little store, Sam, you might like this too.
Very cool. Clocks in at $10. If you buy it in the next 2 weeks, it's $8. But for 10, what do you think?
So we're used to Silesia titles being inexpensive, and I feel like this qualifies as well. It's a little higher than you might expect from their regular games, but I think the price is right, and I would call this a buy it. It was adorable. It was fun. It was hectic, but not too hectic for too long. It worked great. Yeah.
All right. Sounds good. We got one last game to talk about tonight. That is Arcade Archives 2 Cyvalion, developed and published by Hamster, released July 15th, Series X and S, Switch 2, PS5 for $9.99. Cyvalion is a shooting game released by Taito in 1988. Control the mechanical dragon Cyvalion, navigate through the complex maze, and defeat the boss waiting at the goal. With maps and stories changing every playthrough, can you witness all 100-plus unique endings? Jacob, what is Cyvalion?
Cyvalion is the latest of these Arcade Archives games that are teaching me that arcade games for the longest time have been using trackballs for things other than golden tee. like it's just like I'll read up on some of these games, like Camel Try or Camel Tree, whatever you want to call it, yeah. From a few weeks back. That was a trackball game. This one is a trackball game too. And there are some similarities to Camel Tree or Camel whatever, in that you have a maze that you have to navigate in this game. However, it's not like the other game where like you kind of had to like rotate the maze around your character. You are in control of this mecha dragon, and there is actually like a story behind it. You play as this character who like you're trying to escape from this like alien prison, and you somehow gain access to this mecha dragon thing, and you have to navigate it through all these different levels. And at the end of each level, there is a boss, but, what good is a dragon if it's not a fire breathing dragon? And so you have a fire, like you have a limited amount of fire that you're able to use against the various enemies and obstacles throughout each level, and the fire will replenish itself after you stop using it for a little bit, so you have to like time your shots correctly and well, otherwise you're just going to deplete your fire really quick and then be really screwed as you're going through all these levels. And so the enemies, they could get destroyed by fire, but some of like the obstacles, the fire can like sometimes shrink them, so then it just like they just kind of disappear, but the game makes it clear you didn't destroy them. which, I mean, they don't appear again, so I don't know. But anyway, other ones, you just, like, they're just there. And that, like, involves, like, laser cannons, like, these, like, chain spike things that will shoot out. Like, there's even, like, stationary dragons that just kind of, hang out and shoot fire back at you. And as you go through each level, as I said, there's a boss waiting for you at the end, and the boss is almost always some sort of like a mecha creature, as like mecha creature as well. Like there's one that very much like looked like a robotic version of Gigan from the Godzilla movies. There's another one that looks kind of like a roach. There's one that's like, it's just seriously a, like an orb that has like four drills, all over its body. And all of these will shoot out things, but you can actually blow them away with your fire. Again, you have to make sure it's well timed and you're not like overexerting yourself. Otherwise you're going to get crushed by the bosses. And it is real easy to get killed in this game, and this game will eat your quarters like you will not believe. And this is even on the beginning difficulty, where much like Camel Tree, there was like, they do have like a beginner difficulty that will teach you how to play the game. And then afterwards you're expected to go with the higher levels and figure out, you know, like what's going on next. So yeah, it is a really interesting game and it is super difficult. And thank God you could just keep pumping quarters into the game, because otherwise I don't know how the heck I'd complete any of these levels.
Rich kids strats.
Yeah, right. And so I, you know, I just like, it would, like, I'd probably lose like 5 or 6 lives just trying to kill like one boss. Like, I am awful at this game, but like, it's a really cool idea, but it is like, it's just tough as hell. I don't know. Like, I'd be real curious to see how this was in the arcade, trying to control it with a trackball. I don't know that. In fact, I think it might have actually made it more difficult. I don't know. I feel like it would be.
I'm not too sure. I wonder if you could plug a trackball into your Xbox at all. That'd be interesting.
You could plug a mouse into it. So, I mean, like, I guess
if somebody makes... Did you try a mouse with this?
No, I didn't.
Because I don't see mouse and keyboard support, so I don't know if it supports it or not.
I thought... It comes down to the game.
System-wide, it supports it, but game-wise, it has to...
Well, I mean, like, there's a message that says you can play with mouse
all right.
At the beginning. So, I mean, if maybe somebody makes a gaming trackball, that would be weird to find, but I don't know.
Let's get our useless trivia out of the way. This was a 1988 game. It also got a release on the Super Nintendo, but unfortunately not in America. Europe and Japan only.
Yep, I saw that.
And then it got a release on the PS2 as part of Taito Legends 2. You know, I miss when you could get a game like Taito Legends 2 that had 30 games for like $30.
Yeah.
I miss those days.
Those are pretty, or like, honestly, like, you'd be at Walmart at like 5 in the morning and like you'd find like, you know, those SNK collections where it's like you're getting like 10 King of Fighters games for, you know, $5.
Yeah.
It's in the clearance bin. Those were the days.
Anything else to say about this one, or should we talk price?
It's an interesting title. Apparently, the robot dragon shows up. Like, apparently, this is like some sort of spin-off of the Darius game series.
Chris will kick you in the throat for that one. Darius.
Sorry, Chris. Sorry. Darius. So apparently this is a spin-off of it, and that the mecha dragon thing actually shows up in another one of the titles. But yeah, like, it's interesting. It's not it's not my favorite on this, but I'm glad that it's getting a release and people are able to try it out. Like, you know, like so many other Arcade Archives games, it's just like, at the very least, it's worth a try it. Like, this is not one that I'd say, like, you need to rush out and buy immediately, but give it a shot.
Ooh, you might, $10 official verdict?
Might turn out that you are way better than me, and I just am awful at retro games.
You are.
I'm awful at all games, really.
He is.
That's a fact of life, yeah.
Yep. So, official verdict at 10?
Yeah, try it, or buy it.
Flip just a coin.
Yeah.
Live your best life, people. Live your best life.
And if you don't buy, and if you don't buy this one, buy another ACA 2 game. Okay, instead.
There yeah, you we go. Got two coming out this week. Hopefully, we'll be able to talk about those next week, but we shall find out.
Ooh, exciting. Indeed. I don't know what those titles are.
Well, you should look them up. They look pretty good. One's Armadillo Racing.
Pretty good. What?
Yes, I swear. I swear to God.
Is it armadillos that race?
Dude, just look it up.
Armadillo Racing.
Music this episode. We're going to play another track from Mustin's Final Fantasy VI album. It is available now on all the streaming platforms. You could also go to the Mustin Enterprises Bandcamp and get a physical CD for $15 plus shipping. So if you want to hold a disc in your hand, disc, Jacob, disc. You want to hold a disc in your hand, ask Jacob.
Well, hold on. So this disc that's released by Mustin, did he hold it before it was shipped to you? As far as I
know, he hasn't held any of them. They were pressed and are being shipped without his involvement. He did it with Materia Collective.
Because Mustin did not touch it, you're not like touching his dick.
No,
you know, by like touching the
there's no Mustin, you know, DNA on this podcast.
That's
or on his discs. Does anyone have any final words to end the show?
I'm watching the fucking Armadillo Racing thing, and this is absolutely batshit. And oh my god, I need this. I need this game in my life. Why wasn't this more popular? I love it when you talk dirty to me, Joe.